As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. All the angles covered in the outfield.
Randall Grichuk makes the catch!
Randall Grichuk and the Toronto Blue Jays play here on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It was a night full of long balls for the New York Yankees, and they used seven of them to roll to a 13-2 victory over the Toronto Blue Jays. Welcome to the post-game show. It's being brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers. I'm Ben Wagner. We'll have Mike Wilner back in a moment. Let's take you through the totals in this one as the New York Yankees win for the seventh consecutive time. They are now 28-21. The Blue Jays have won 19 out of their last 30, but they're in a little bit of a tough rut right now and slipped to 26-22 with the loss. The New York Yankees, 13 runs on 14 hits and no errors. New York at the plate tonight went 2-for-7 with runners in scoring position, leaving six men on base. The Blue Jays, meanwhile, had two runs on five hits, no errors, went 0-for-8 with runners in scoring position, and left six men on base. Starters in this one will earn decisions, and, well, Gerrit Cole deserved to move to 6-3 with his effort tonight. He was on the bump, and he went through seven innings of one-run ball, allowed three hits in all, and took a no-hitter into the sixth inning. Jonathan Villar snapped that with his leadoff double. Cole would strike out eight and walk two. He's now 6-3. Tanner Roark had to play catch up from the second pitch that he threw tonight. Roark evens his record at 2-2. Allowed six runs, all earned on six hits, lasted four innings, walking two, striking out four. Jacob Wagispack, Hector Perez made his major league debut. Anthony Bass then closed up shop for the Blue Jays. It was a ball game that lasted 3 hours and 1 minute. 3:01, the time of game, where the New York Yankees had a 13-2 win over the Toronto Blue Jays. Up next, our player of the game and the play of the game follows this time out. It's Blue Jays baseball powered by Jack Links on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hi, this is Mark Budzinski, and you're listening to Blue Jays baseball on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Back here at Baseball Control in Toronto, it's a post-game show brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers. The Blue Jays get good and thumped for a second straight night, falling 13-2 to the New York Yankees. With Ben Wagner, I'm Mike Wilner. The Blue Jays' first series loss in exactly 1 month. And tomorrow night, they'll try to avoid being swept in a three-game series for the first time this season. The Jays still have a four-game hold on a playoff spot in the American League, even though they're now a game and a half behind the New York Yankees for second place in the AL East. It is time for our play of the game, and given how the night spiraled out of control, we decided to go with how the night started. Gerrit Cole in the top of the first inning gets the Blue Jays 1-2-3 with a couple of strikeouts, three pitch strikeouts of Kevin Biggio and Travis Shaw. Then Tanner Roark takes the mound in the bottom of the first, throws a first pitch strike to DJ LeMahieu, and then this.
Luke Voit leads all of Major League Baseball in home runs, and LeMahieu skies one out to deep right field. Biggio back at the wall. He leaps, and he can't get it. It's gone into the front row as an opposite field home run clears the fence in right field for DJ LeMahieu.
It started with a Yankee Stadium special, a 339-foot home run to right field. It's a home run in only one ballpark in all of Major League Baseball, and it's the one they were playing at tonight. But the next six Yankee home runs, full measure as they went on to the route.
And then some, right? I mean, there were some loud, long ones struck off the Blue Jays pitching staff tonight. LeMahieu is the tone setter. He set it up last night, driving in five runs. In fact, the number one and number two slots last night combined to score half of the 20 runs. First time in Yankee history that that's been done. And not the undercard, but an amazing performance by the number nine hitter. After the one and two slots drive in five last night each, guess what Kyle Higashioka does tonight?
Right. He drives in five, and we'll, I'm sure, touch on him in a second. But this one, I mean, LeMahieu, we talked about setting the tone. The Yankees hit at least six home runs in consecutive games for the first time in club history. The Blue Jays allow at least six home runs in consecutive games for the first time in franchise history. I know that there are a lot of people out there that are thinking, because this is the way a lot of Toronto fans think, okay, now we're seeing the real Blue Jays in these last two games against the New York Yankees. It's important to remember that this is just a tiny little snapshot. And the Blue Jays getting thumped two games in a row doesn't mean that all of a sudden the first 46 games were an illusion.
It certainly doesn't. There are big concerns, though, because this is the time of the season, whether it's 162 or whether it's a 60-game season like we have right in front of us right now. You want to be playing your best baseball. You want to go into the final couple of weeks with a roadmap to how you want to move into the postseason to give your best chance to advance. With the pitching, are players getting back? Are they back healthy? Do guys need time off? The Blue Jays have a ton of injury concerns, and now they've got pitching concerns. And I don't know that outside Hyunjin Ryu, who you still wonder, does he have the ability to go deep into a ball game? Have the Blue Jays been holding him back to this point? But because of that, you've got a bullpen that's so taxed. There are so many questions about the durability now, even within the parameters of allowed usage for the Blue Jays and those young arms. While at times electric, while at times maybe not so much, is Anthony Kay wearing down? Is Ryan Borucki wearing down because of how they have been used and so much usage earlier in this season? It's a point in the season where there are still more questions than answers, I think, than any point in the year that the Blue Jays have had prior to the last 8 weeks.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think for a team that lost 95 games last year, you would expect sort of things to not be fully set heading into the last couple of weeks of the season. I think it's important to be able to set up your pitching, and it's important to be able to give guys breathers if they need it. And for that to happen, you need to be able to clinch with like three or four games left in the season at least. And that means maintaining a three or four game advantage on the teams behind you. And that is tenuous right now because, again, the Blue Jays are only up by four over the Seattle Mariners, who are, I mean, I'll grant you 22 and 26, but they are the ninth seed right now in the American League. The Blue Jays remain a half game up on Cleveland. They're playing against the Cubs, and right now that game is a 2-2 tie. Right now that game is a 2-2 tie as they play in the bottom of the seventh inning. It is time to choose a player of the game, and as much fun as it would be to give it to Anthony Bass for getting one out on one pitch with the bases loaded, I think it's pretty clear who it is tonight.
It is a runaway winner in my mind for Kyle Higashioka with his three home run game. A guy that Aaron Boone and the Yankees weren't necessarily married to help Gerrit Cole turn it around. He's in the starting lineup tonight because his two previous starts were really good with Gerrit Cole. And they thought, all right, if this is working now for a second turn through the rotation, we're not going to say that Gerrit Cole has his personal catcher, and it's Kyle Higashioka. But if Gerrit Cole somehow ignites this out of Kyle Higashioka, the number nine hitter, with his three-home run performance tonight, they're going to keep playing that hot hand.
The third straight year that a Yankee has hit three home runs in a game. Last year, Gary Sanchez did it. The year before that, Aaron Hicks did it. You look down the list in Yankee history, amazingly, Babe Ruth only did it once in the regular season. He did do twice in the World Series. Lou Gehrig, four different games with at least three home runs for the Yankees. One of the times he hit four. And Kyle Higashioka is in some pretty fast company right now. And congratulations to him. And you could see it, Ben, on that third home run. He was trying to keep that smile from his face, but he couldn't do it.
He shouldn't have done it.
No.
You got to live in the moment a little bit. Let people know that you're human and you're enjoying the game, and he clearly enjoyed the game offensively. He should take some pride in what he called tonight for Gerrit Cole, too. I know his fastball got a little erratic down the stretch, but early on, Gerrit Cole was unhittable, and it proved on the lineup card, too, because he didn't allow a hit until the sixth.
He was terrific. Kyle Higashioka, terrific behind the plate and at the plate with three home runs and five RBIs, a guy who came into the game hitting 188. The Yankees beat up on the Blue Jays 13-2. We will be back to wrap things up and get you set for the series finale tomorrow night. It's the Blue Jays postgame powered by Jack Links on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
When the sun goes down, we up the ante. This is Sportsnet Tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
It's 10:30. Sportsnet Tonight / Blue Jays Talk. My name is George Russick, alongside Josh Goldberg for the first time in... I don't even know when the last time you and I did a show, but it's been forever and ever and ever. Blue Jays get absolutely punched in the mouth by the Yankees for the second consecutive night, 13-2, and I'm still on the side, Josh, where teams 26-22 still, you know, comfortably in a playoff spot, but obviously coughing up 33 runs in their last two games. It's not ideal. Have you seen anything positive the last two nights?
No, not one
like
thing.
Not
I guess
one
Joe.
One little thing.
Joe Panik hit a home run tonight, and he's been pretty good. Like since his, I think his OPS was at like 350 at its lowest point, and he's actually been good, but. You know, if your biggest positive for the most part in two games, I guess Vladdy had three hits last night and hit the ball hard another couple of times, and he hit a home run the other way last night, so that's encouraging. But it's hard to really look at getting outscored, you know, what are they giving up here? 33 runs in the last two games, and, you know, you've been outscored 33-8 over two ball games by a team that is approaching full strength, and Gleyber Torres wasn't even in the lineup tonight. You know, the starting pitching is a big-time problem. Like, I don't think there's any getting around it. At this point, it's basically Ryu and, I suppose, to a much lesser extent, Walker are guys that you can count on. And then everybody else, it's really rough. And if they have any sort of aspirations of going beyond just the whatever... best of three series, whatever we want to call it, the wild card round, I guess, they're going to be in tough without starting pitching because there are no off days, so you can't shorten your rotation. And when you have two guys, you couldn't shorten your rotation in a perfect world anyways. So without starting pitching and, you know, the domino effect of your bullpen every single game for the most part being so taxed, like those guys, what are they going to have left in the tank come game one, assuming that you get there? It's just the trickle down effect of poor starting pitching or non-existent starting pitching is just so large and could be very, I guess, catastrophic for any hope that the Jays might have of going on a run.
I know it's tough to swallow two games where you give up 33 runs, and Tanner Roark, again, not good. Four innings, gave up six hits, all earned with two walks and four strikeouts. Six runs, excuse me, all earned. His ERA's ballooned up to 641. He has struggled mightily. Not the guy they thought they were getting when they signed him, but obviously this is a weird season, and you don't know if he'll bounce back next year and be the guy we saw early on in his major league career. But is it just two games? Do we get way ahead of ourselves saying, ooh, maybe the playoff spot is in jeopardy? Because to me, Josh, 500 is going to get you into the playoffs. The Jays have 12 games left after tonight. To me, their magic number to make the playoffs is four wins. Mm-hmm. 500 will get you into the playoffs in the American League. I think this team can easily win four games in their last 12, and they'll be a playoff team.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like, you know, we'll see what tomorrow might bring. Like, Tanaka has often not been an easy out for the Jays. And Chase Anderson, if you get four from him, realistically, you would probably take that considering his kind of track record and what he's done this year. So if you lose that ball game, you know, the Phillies have been hot lately. That's not necessarily going to be the easiest series in the world. Then you got the Yankees again, and then you've got the Orioles. So, you know, could you be going into that Orioles series needing two of three to really lock down a playoff spot? You certainly hope not. But if the starting pitching doesn't get even a fraction better, you're going to be in real tough behind the eight ball, I think, in a lot of these matchups, even against the Phillies with some of the issues that they have, especially in their starting rotation outside of Nola and Wheeler. Like, they have their problems, but they're a good offensive team. So, you know, the Jays, it's simple. If guys can start to piece together, give you five, then, okay, I feel good about getting those four or five wins. But honestly, even if they are in a bad spot a week from now, look at the competition. Like, the Angels are getting killed tonight by Arizona. Like, Seattle stinks. Baltimore stinks. That's the thing. Like, even if you, the next week, you pick up one or two wins in the next five or six games, let's say, and it's pretty rough, I still think that your playoff chances are going to be like at least 80%.
Kevin Barker, you hear him on Blues on Baseball Central. He's a Sportsnet 590 The Fan baseball analyst. He joins us here after the Blue Jays get just dummied for the second night in a row, 13-2. Mr. Barker, how are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're good. Okay, so I have to ask you this. Aside from burning your bullpen, from a positional player standpoint, you played in the show. Does it matter to you if you were on the Blue Jays that you got your ass handed to you the last two nights?
Yeah, I don't think so. Like, I think they're a young team. Well, I don't think they really know any better. It's, you know, what are you going to do about it? You try and forget about it as quick as you can. You come back the next day and hope your starting pitcher's really good. It's about your starting pitcher. You know, the opposing team has a really good starting pitcher. You don't. You know, tonight, Roark was, again, not real good, right? He gave up four homers. He threw balls right down the middle. You don't throw very hard. You can't get away with that, especially to a very hot team like the Yankees. In Yankee Stadium, you know, line to line, they play that short porch and right better than any team in baseball. You throw balls down the middle, you don't get them back. They did that. They gave up seven homers. Two sinkers, four four-seamers, one changeup, all of them right down the middle. You can't do that at the big league level. Until they start locating better, you're not going to see the five anything. Like, it's just, you know, Ryu is Ryu, and he can get away with 88 to 91. Why? He locates. And when he misses, his misses are good. They're in off the plate. They're not in the middle of the plate, because you can't live in the middle of the plate in the big league level. You know, it's, you look at Gerrit Cole. Gerrit Cole throws 99 miles an hour. He doesn't throw it down the middle because he knows he has to live. Now, he doesn't have to live on the corners because it's 98, 99, but it has to be outer thirds. Right, it has to be, you know, a pitcher's pitch. It can't be hitter's pitches thrown down the middle and hope you can get away with that. They just starting pitching, you know, you can think all you want about, you know, what the lineup's like. They're not running the bases right. You don't get good starting pitching at this level, you're not going to win a ton of games. And right now they're not getting that.
So, you know, looking at Roark specifically, like, the stuff is not great, right? Like, there's nothing plus about his stuff. I really wonder, and I'm curious what you think about, how can a guy like that really have consistent success at the major league level without really doing anything particularly that well?
Well, in the past, his sinker's been really good. Yeah, you know, he's a sinker ball guy. He lives down. You know, the sinker hasn't been real good since he's been a Blue Jay. He's had to go away from that and throw more four-seamers and flip breaking balls. And, you know, it's a little bit of trickery. When your best pitch is not working, how do you get guys out? Again, he's a right-handed pitcher who throws 91. Those guys have to, you know, have a little bit of oh-oh luck with the breaking ball and the changeup, and arm speed on the changeup has to be great, and the location of the fastball up has to be much better. You got to crowd hitters. You got to make hitters occasionally with 91 uncomfortable. You know, you got to move the plate over closer to him. You know, actually, you don't really do that. But when you're pitching and you're missing the way he's missing, crowd more people. He doesn't do that. Again, it's, you know, you get in hitters counts like 1-0 to LeMahieu. You know, that's when he gets extended. He uses that right, that porch in right field, and he gets those cheap homers. But it's the counts you live in when you're not a very, you know, successful pitcher when it comes to mile per hour. You have to not live in the middle of the plate, not getting fastball counts, not have that guy gets along with you because you're behind all the time. Again, he's just stuff-wise, he's not going to outstuff you. he has to outpitch you. And as a Blue Jay, he just hasn't been doing that.
Kevin, I said before you jumped on that I think, in my estimation, 500 gets into the playoffs in the American League based on 8 teams. That means the Blue Jays just need 4 wins here in their last 12 games. Do you think that's accurate?
Yeah, I think so. You know, who's chasing them? Seattle, the Angels, and there's one more team, Baltimore. But, you know, any 3 of those teams aren't real good teams, right? The Blue Jays are going to have to collapse here in the next 13 games for the 3 teams that I just mentioned to catch up. The 3 teams would have to win, you know, say 10 out of their 13 games, and the Blue Jays, you know, they win 7 out of 6. Or 7, they go 7-6 down the stretch, they got it, they're in the playoffs. But again, how do they do that? How do they grind out wins? You know, they're not going to go out and outscore people. They're not going to be able to go, you know, win games 10-9. It's not going to happen. Lineup's not good enough. They don't play good enough defense, and their starting pitching's not good enough. You know, Ryu is consistently good. He's not great, but he's consistently good. Every time you go out there, you got a real good feeling that you're going to win this game because he's going to keep you in it, and he's going to allow the offense to grind out enough at bats to maybe get a bloop and a bomb. That's how they're going to score their runs. But when you're facing the elite, like the Coles and the Groms, and you need your starting pitcher to match his innings, and they don't, this is the games. This is how they look. And tomorrow, Tanaka, you know, he's a good pitcher. He's going to come after them with fastballs down and that split finger, and he's going to spin some sliders, and he's going to throw a bunch all that at you. And they're going to have to grind out some at-bats, and they're going to have to get some, string together a couple of hits. And Chase Anderson's going to have to throw quality strikes. Stop expecting these guys to go 6 innings. Not going to happen. But what they do throw has to be quality. If that's 4 innings, that's 1 run, 4 innings. Can Chase Anderson do that tomorrow and maybe turn that over to a Hatch, a Merriweather, and then you're giving it to the high-leverage guys? That's how they're going to grind out these wins. If Chase Anderson doesn't do that and you start seeing Merriweather in the 3rd inning, the score is going to be like it was the last 2 nights.
So, you know, with Giles out and, you know, looking at the bullpen, the usage, you talk about the starting pitchers and not expecting them to go 5, 6 and sometimes not even 5 because it hasn't happened this year. You know, what's the level of concern that the bullpen is running on fumes here? Like, we saw guys last night who have had success struggle. You know, I would think sooner or later all these high leverage innings are going to have to start taking their toll a little bit.
You know, I think it already has. You know, a lot of these guys, like the Baruckies and the Hatches, you know, you can throw in A.J. Cole there. You know, A.J. Cole, we didn't expect him to be this good. And they're pitching. Every pitch they throw matters. They're coming in huge spots and expected to get some big outs to some really good teams. Like the Yankees, you know, when they were beating them in Buffalo, they had to come in and get some big outs. And these are big spots for these kids. And to expect them to continue to do this, it's hard, right? Some starting pitcher is going to have to step up and think, okay, how do I just zone in and make those quality pitches over and over and over? Get on the same page with my catcher. Stop looking in the dugout. He sets his target. I try and hit the target. If I miss, have quality misses. I've already mentioned what the quality miss looks like, not down the middle. We've seen it. You know, the 7 home runs and all the home runs last night, those aren't quality pitches. Those are center cut pitches to a really good lineup that don't let you get the ball back. If they do, you know, if they continue to do these things, the Phillies are hot lineup-wise, right? You make bad pitches to those guys, they're going to score a ton of runs. This offense for the Blue Jays can't match that. They need to have good starting pitching, and tomorrow for me, it has to start with Chase Anderson.
Kevin Barker, you hear him on Baseball Central, Sportsnet 590, the Fan baseball analyst. Joining us here on the Blue Jays Talk, George Russick, Josh Kohlberg. Sportsnet 590 the Fan. Barker, because I like asking these questions because they're fun, and you talk about the struggles with the starting rotation. Who are the 3 pitchers who go for you in order in round 1 when the Blue Jays hopefully make the playoffs?
Well, you would hope that it's Ryu to throw game 1, you know, unless they need a big start, you know, last 4 or 5 games, they're going to have to pitch him. You know, I think they work it out where he, you know, goes short-term, meaning he pitches every 4 days. I'm not real sure he can do that down the stretch, so hopefully they can skip a start. He makes the first start on, you know, some 7 or 8 game rest, which is okay. You know, you want your best pitching. Roark's not even a thought. Chase Anderson's not a thought. Taijuan Walker, right? If he, to me, looks like he's favoring something, whether it's his shoulder, the extension's not there. We saw him yesterday throw more breaking balls. He is a four-seam cutter guy for me. Yesterday didn't use that. Why? That's the question. You want to get beat against a good team, you do it with your best stuff. Yesterday he didn't do that. There's questions for me with that. And in your third game, you know, you could start Robbie Ray, and then it's a bullpen arm. You're bringing in the Merriweathers and the Hatches and the Baruckies, and then you turn it over to the Deleases and the Basses and the Coles. You know, you that's the ultimate goal here is in that three-game set, can you beat one of the other team's first two guys? That you got to figure. If you probably play right now, if it ended, I think they're playing the Rays. You'd have to beat one of those first two guys, and then the third game, gloves are off. That's what it is, right? You hope something happens in that third game to give you a chance. You're throwing every arm you got to go to the next level, but that's what it is. Somehow you got to figure out how to win one of the first two, and then it's all hands on deck. And if they do that, right, they can be a dangerous team if a guy like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. gets hot the next, we'll say, 10 games. He gets hot down the stretch, gets a little bit more confidence. Guerrero Jr. stays hot, does what he does. They move him to the three hole. I don't know what they're waiting for. Travis Shaw's not giving you anything. Stop with the matchup thing. Well, the righty-lefty-righty thing's not working. Put your best hitters up front to give you a chance against these really good pitchers. I really don't understand that, and I really never will. Stack them. You know, put them to who cares if they're right-handed. You're trying to win these games. You do that down the stretch, give it, you know, some theme here where there's some consistency. The guy don't have to come to the lineup and go, oh, I hit third yesterday, but now I'm hitting seventh. You know, it sort of weighs on these guys. So if they get a little consistent with that, they get these guys in the groove down the stretch, then they get that three-game playoff, you never know what can happen. Anything can happen in three games.
Kevin, should we be concerned of the just flat-out lack of production from Jonathan Villar? He had his first extra base hit tonight as a Blue Jay. He hit eighth tonight. What have you seen from him so far in a Blue Jays uniform?
Hey, it looks like he's trying hard. You know, that's the guy gets traded in the middle of the season. Can't be the easiest thing. You know, he comes to a new team. He's trying to make new friends. It's different. You know, where do I live? How do I get to the park? You know, all of these things. What do I do with my family? You know, all these things have to take place. And then you go out and try to perform and be the best player you can be, right? You know, we knew this coming in that he's not a great defender. We knew that he takes chances on the bases. But what they were hoping is when he comes here that he can get hot from both sides of the plate, right? He's a switch-hitting bat who – you know, can get on base and steal a big base in the eighth inning, right? If you give him the sign, you know, keep him under control, he can steal that big base for you. But, right, it looks to me like he's late, and he's trying too hard. You try too hard, you overswing, you miss pitches you should be hitting, which he does a lot. He's a good hitter, right? He's just missing pitches. Looks to me like he's overswinging. He needs to take a deep breath, go up there, see ball, hit ball. I know that sounds easy, and that's, you know, little league kind of things. But at this level, when you're facing this kind of pitching down the stretch, and you know, they're facing teams that are trying to make the playoffs. The Phillies, that they're trying to make the playoffs. These guys are going to try and make good pitches. You got to simplify it. You got to, you know, how quickly can I get my front foot down, get athletic? You know, they call that the break. That's your front foot. Break, hit from a firm front side, get the barrel to the baseball. If I can consistently do that because I have talent, good things are going to happen. If he can do these things down the stretch, he will be a huge help because he makes their lineup longer. Teoscar Hernandez, you put him in the cleanup spot, you put a VR in the seventh or eighth spot doing their thing, you never know. Maybe they can make a run at this thing.
Kevin, I'm not accusing the Blue Jays of anything right now, but it just felt convenient that the night that Derek Fisher had last night, all of a sudden, oh, look, he got hit in the knee in batting practice. Oh, we got to put him on the IL. Have you seen in your major league career teams where guys fake injuries to make roster moves? I'm not saying this happened here, but it worked out really, really well for the Blue Jays, didn't it?
Yeah, listen, I have no idea. I haven't seen tape. I have no idea if he got hit or not, and truly I don't care. You have to ask yourself, can he help this team right now win games, right? This may have worked out best for the Blue Jays. Whatever the reason, however he got hurt, he's on the IL, and now you're putting the best product on the field. When he was in the outfield, he's not the best product. You know, you can have other – Kevin Biggio, for me, I don't like him in the outfield, but he's better than Fisher, and he'll give you – you know, he runs better routes, and he'll catch balls that he's supposed to catch. When the ball's hit to him, you're not holding your breath. Right, he's going to catch those things when down the stretch, they need – with the way the starting pitching is, every ball that hits that should be an out has to be an out. That's my point, is put the best product on the field. That way at the end of the season, if you get beat and you're not where you want to be, It's not because you didn't put your lineup out there in your best defense every single day. And now I think they can do that because, you know, they're not trying to finagle ways to get a certain guy in a lineup just because, you know, the ball comes off his bat occasionally. So it's, you know, it seems to be working out. Looks to me like what's going to happen is, you know, he goes on the IL here in the offseason. They'll make up their mind one way or the other what they do with him, whether they take him off the 40-man or not.
Kevin Barker from Baseball Central, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Blue Jays analyst. Kevin, always great. Thanks for this, pal.
You got it. Have a great night, everybody.
There he goes, Kevin Barker. Josh, what are the chances? You know, what a lucky break for the Blue Jays. Not so much for Derek Fisher. But, man, taking that ball in batting practice. Ooh, my knees hurt. We got to put you on
that
the
That nobody
IL.
Saw.
Nobody that saw nobody it. Saw. Had nothing to do with you just dropping two balls that beer league outfielders can snag. That really worked out in a nice little package for the Toronto Blue Jays. And do you see him ever again in a Blue Jays uniform?
I'm going to say no. You know what? I'm going to say no. Like, it might be just kind of the easy answer right now with how just egregiously awful last night was, but he's been terrible, right? He's been terrible. Last year he hit .161 with 6 homers in 40 games. I understand, you know, in a limited sample size, his OPS was over 900 this year, but that's the thing about a small sample size. He had like a good weekend or whenever it was, a series at Fenway Park that really propped up his numbers. That's kind of the thing. Occasionally he will put a good swing on a ball and hit a home run 480 feet. Not too long ago in Buffalo at Salem. So he's clearly got that in him a little bit, but everything else surrounding it, consistency at the plate, non-existent, defense, know-how in the outfield, non-existent. Like, what is Derek Fisher at this point? A way below average outfielder and a below average bat who occasionally will showcase some pop. Like, to me, he's not a major leaguer, and if you have a tough decision to make or a decision of any kind to make, whether he belongs on the roster going forward, I understand there's a dearth of outfielders organizationally, but you know, the way that Teoscar, and I know Grichuk's kind of cooled off, and Gurriel have looked, like, that's pretty much entrenched in your outfield. So if you need a roster spot for more infield depth, another pitcher, another arm of some kind, yeah, Derek Fisher should be one of the first guys to go. So I'll say right now, yeah, I don't think we see him again in a Blue Jay uniform.
Can I be positive, Pete, right now when it comes to the Blue
Sure.
Jays? I know a lot of fans want to just dive off the bandwagon after just getting destroyed these last two games by the Yankees, but maybe just the lack of just bad starting pitching makes Ross and Mark potentially go out there and acquire a big time arm using some of this rich prospect capital they have to supplement this team that has so many good young stars if and when we play an entire season next year. I know a guy like James Paxton's a free agent. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't he look great in a Blue Jays uniform coming full circle and coming back to Toronto and pitching in Canada, although he's not having the best season this year. But could this be the tipping point for Ross and Mark to say, yeah, we have all these good young players. We got to help them out with some big-time arms because the offense is good enough to compete for a playoff spot.
Yeah, like, I think there is something to be said for that. And you also have to factor in the Nate Pearson situation, right? Like, he was expected to be something this year, not somebody who made, you know, 3 or 4 mediocre starts or worse and then got hurt and then you basically didn't see him again. Certainly not in a starting role. Yeah, Paxton, Bauer would be great. I know he's on this kind of thing where he's just going to take 1-year deals. Maybe he looks at the Jays and says, hey, this is a good situation. Like, maybe I'm the piece for a year that puts them over the top. They should be looking big time to be making moves in the rotation because right now it's not good enough. Like, I know Roark's going to be back for another year because somehow he got a 2-year deal. Like, it wasn't enough just to give him 1 year for $12 million. You had to lock him in pretty early on for that second year at $12 million bucks. Oh, for sure. There's no doubt. And maybe that's the pool that they're swimming in. They have to swim a little harder in the current because free agents, you know, it's the AL East, it's Toronto, all of that stuff that's been baked in for years. Maybe it still exists a little bit, but perhaps the Ryu contract and the fact that it's worked out may open some eyes for some higher profile free agents. It's just, you know, there aren't that many great arms available on the market. Like, maybe you look to allocate some of your prospect capital into a trade. Like, to me, no question, you should be looking to bring in impact players. Like, I saw Shai said on Baseball Central, George Springer, like, doesn't matter. Throw money around, splash around in the pool of dough, and go out and get a high impact bat and go out and get a high impact pitcher. Like, I understand COVID has hurt the bottom line for teams, but I still think that, you know, the Jays will be able to spend money here going forward. And if you fancy yourself a contender, go out and spend like one.
Right. Blue Jays lose 13-2 tonight to the Yankees. Just gave up 33 runs in the last two nights. They'll look to at least grab one game tomorrow night in the series finale against the Yankees, the final time they play at Yankee Stadium this season. Straight ahead, though, we will morph into Sportsnet tonight. Eric Pincus, LA Lakers writer for the Bleacher Report, co-host of the Hollywood Hoops podcast, will join us. Eric Patterson, golf writer for The Score, will do all that straight ahead. Sportsnet tonight coming up. George and Josh along the Sportsnet Radio Network.